Welcome back to the Beaver Banter Podcast. I'm Nick Daschle, and I cover Oregon State football and basketball for the Oregonian and Oregon Live. The Beavers suffered their first setback of the football season for 2022, losing to USC 17-14 at Research Stadium last Saturday night. Joining me on the podcast as usual each week is former Oregon State cornerback Kyle White. Welcome back, Kyle.
Thank you.
So, obviously, I was at the stadium with 28,000 plus people that were kind of on the edge of their seats all night. And where did you see the game?
I was again standing up at my family-in-law's house on the coast. So we were in Walport.
Did you guys have a text chain going with players on Saturday?
Yeah, it was really quiet up until right at the end of the game when it was that controversial who messed up, what happened at the end of the game, like who was scored on, what coverage was it, and we were going back and forth. It was just a lot of sadness and stress and anxiety up. And, you know, I think the Beavers love doing it to the fans because, I mean, there's been some great games from the Beavers lately.
Well, I mean, yeah, they are 3-1, so they've been on the plus side more than the minus side. But but yeah, I mean, that was certainly a game where, I mean, I thought coming away from it, you could say, man, Oregon State should have won that game. But I also thought USC could have said the same thing. It wasn't like, you know, one side dominated and lost or got lucky and won. It, you know, both sides had their moments, and it just came down to, you know, a play here or there. It came down to, I mean, you could probably pick four or five plays. Any one of those goes in Oregon State's favor, and it's probably a W last Saturday. What were your initial thoughts on the game and the outcome?
Truthfully, my favorite part of the Beavers offense now is Griffin. I love him as a running back. I think he was a heavy spark to the offense. Defensively, we played really well, kept them at low points. That was awesome. Again, you know, there's always some flags here and there, penalties, you know, we can definitely work on. I was frustrated with all the interceptions. That was the one negative that you can really, really pinpoint out of the whole game. But, you know, that's something that you can easily go over and something that can be easily fixed in the weight room. And I think that has to go to not forcing a ball on top of pass protection. And I mean, if we can, you know, work on those two things. And again, just like we said last week, that might be one of the two hardest games we'll have to play all season. I'm okay with how we looked. I think we played well and held our own up until the end.
Yeah. The thing with Saturday night is you can't make it be two losses or three losses. You gotta, it was a game you could have won, and maybe down the road you'll win one like that, but you can't let that one linger and go to Utah and get run out, because they'll do it. And then suddenly lose all your momentum going, you know, in the weeks to come. So there were several pivotal plays in the game, I thought, and I'm sure I'm going to forget some of them. But, you know, the fumble at the 1 yard line, boy, that was I saw a video of the ball popped up in the air. It was probably 4 or 5 feet up in the air. Shoot, that's a 50-50 ball at that point. Oregon State gets that, it's a Jack Coletto touchdown more than likely if they don't recover it in the end zone even. So I don't know what you remember about that play, but.
Oh, yeah. When you see, I think Oregon State had a great defensive stop. I was like, oh, we're about to score off just the fumble, and it was on the 1 yard line. I was crazy, like energized, all electricity in my household, and we're just up and ready to scream a touchdown. All of a sudden, it's on the one. They get out, and that was just a very pivotal play that could have just changed the whole momentum of the game, and then we would have been playing on the attack instead of, you know, just sitting there 50-50 between USC and Oregon State. And, I mean, there again, just like you're saying, there's multiple. I mean, with Oregon State having the ball, they had a chance to go down and score. I think that they were moving the ball down pretty well, and you force a throw into triple coverage. I don't know, but you know, I can see that he had pressure. Again, it happened again where it's like we're going down the field again, force another one. Again, there's pressure, and you just have a 6'6", I think he was, 6'6", middle linebacker that happens to be actually good with hands. So, you know, there's multiple different plays that you can just sit there and what if, or what if this one. I think when you lose the turnover battle, you potentially have lost the game. And so I think that's one thing that Oregon State, first game or second game out of the four so far that hadn't came up with multiple turnovers, multiple times that we could have. But, you know, like USC came up with theirs and they came out with the win.
Yeah, no, statistically, it's proven that turnovers are probably the number one deciding factor in a football game. But on that fumble, you know, when you're in the middle of a scrum like that, I don't know how often you've been in one of those, but what are they like?
Oh, they're the worst. But the thing is if you're down at the bottom and you have a chance to get it, but you don't have it, you go for it because nobody can see the bottom of the pile until everybody's moved. So, like, you know, I think in that instance, Oregon State should have just kept fighting for it until the ref had moved them. I mean, it's hard to get your hands on it when somebody else is like, it's in dire need and you're going to get poked. You're going to get prodded. Everybody's just going to do whatever they can to make you feel the most uncomfortable to see if you slip up with the ball. Because in that instance, that's when the ball's taken from you. So, and then the ref never saw it. So that's why normally the opposing team in that instance or the other team or you come up with the ball again.
In college or high school or in the CFL, did you ever, would you ever have the ball at the bottom of a pile and then have to hold on to it? Or
I won't lie. When I was in junior college, right before I came to Oregon State, one of my teammates had fumbled. I dove down on it and I was in the bottom of it. And you feel all this pressure, just everybody on top of you. And all of a sudden you just start getting all these fingers to the neck, to the ribs, to the stomach, like somebody's pinching you. Somebody tried to take off my shoe one time. I mean, you never know what happens in them, and you never will know because you can't see on the inside of that pile. But it's not a fun place to be, but you also are the hero at that moment.
Yeah. The holding, you know, another play was the holding penalty on Treshawn Harrison on Martinez's run to the six. You know, he gets to the 11, and that's where the hold takes place. I mean, if Treshawn just lets go of him, it just the ball's at the 8. I mean, I'm thinking it's probably maybe doesn't get to the 6, but it's first and goal inside the 10. Instead, it goes back to the I think it went back to the 21. Then it was delay of game, and then I think there was more lost yardage, and they missed the field goal. I mean, it was. I don't know. I don't know if you remember that play. Probably do.
Yeah. I mean,
what did you see?
The way Griffin was running the ball, you don't need to hold. You know, he was already 2-3 yards outside of him. You know, you could just let him go. And if he's a great running back, which I think that Griffin is a great running back, he'll make a miss if needed. Or I think he had the momentum to just skate past him regardless. There was no need for a hold. There was no need for you to overly, you know, block. I think it was a great block up until the moment that Griffin got to the outside of him. At that time, you have to let go. I know it gets hard when you don't know where the ball's at between your right and your left because he's running behind you. But if the corner decides to take a direction, you got to either push him that way even more to bounce the running back in, which he'll understand, or just let him go and, hey, you won a battle because we got a first down. So, you know, like when it came to that play, it was very rough to see because it was such a great, explosive, much-needed play that had all the momentum going our way and get called back and then another penalty. And it was just like, we can't just keep letting these happen. You know, like we need to change momentum.
Then there's the play that obviously if Oregon State stops it, the game's over. I don't see any way in the world USC wins if they stop the 4th and 6 at midfield where Caleb Williams runs for the first down. I've probably watched that 50 times just to see, you know, was there forward progress stopped? You know, who had a chance to get him? You know, how'd the play set up? I asked Jonathan whether he thought forward progress had been stopped. He didn't think so. He thought it was a bang bang type play. But I mean, you know, Caleb Williams is kind of caught back there and he starts taking off. Andrew Chatfield's got a hand on his shoulder pad, but he doesn't get enough of it to really slow him down. Then Jaden Grant's got him by the lower legs, and and he's trying to get him down, and then Omar Spates has got him teed up, and he just can't quite get him down, and then the offensive line just comes and runs over everybody and pushes him past. But what did you see on that play?
Literally exactly how you described it. I saw a great defensive stop potentially. When you got one guy that hits the quarterback, and you're like, okay, is this it? And then he just starts going, and you see Jaden Grant, and he just stops him. Like, all momentum was stopped. And then we have, like, two, three other Beavers, and I'm like, come on, let's go. Like, all you got to do is just keep them there. And, I mean, just like Coach Smith said, I think that forward momentum wasn't stopped. Like, because it's such a bang-bang moment, and you don't know, you have to give it at least 3 seconds or so where it's just like, okay, like, I don't want him just getting hit. But it was a moment where, like, I think Oregon State's defense, you have to, and I can't say it was them, because they played so hard at that moment, and, like, down repetitive after time again, they were there. And that moment is more of like a, if I wanted to nitpick at it, you just have to have all the guys like, come on, we got to push this. And so, you know, with one person on the wrong side of him, you're either pushing him forward or backward. In that moment, he got pushed forward to the first. And so it's just good play by Caleb, but it was a rough one, because that could have been it.
How deflating is that for a defense to come up short on a play like that? Because, you know, you've got to get right back into it and try to stop him again. But, you know that's the game if you'd stopped him there.
It hurts. It stings, because you did so well. And you're like, all right, like, I did my job. Normally when it comes to fourth down, they're punting. But because it's the end of the game, like, you got to sit there and go, it's not over yet. And you have to retrain your mind. We're starting back at one, even though it's fourth down, because you never know what's going to happen after that. And so, you know, like, I know it hurt them. I know it sucks. And I know that they were on the field and they were fighting all game long. But you just got to buy in on one more play. That's all you got to do.
Then I guess the last play that, you know, is – this side of the game, obviously, it was a touchdown to Jordan Addison. It, Jonathan described the, you know, he said the coverage was cloud coverage. You know, Rajon Wright was initially on Addison, and he went over to take the back out of the backfield in the corner, and the safety was supposed to come over and get Addison, you know, where he caught the ball, but he got there looked like about a beat too late, and that's all it took. And what did you see on that play?
So it was so funny, because I called cover two as soon as I saw ball snapped. You can sit there and see it. I mean, if you analyze football enough, you can sit there and read that's cover two. And Rajon Wright did everything he was supposed to, besides potentially one thing. Like, if you want to be nitpicky, you want to force him inside of you. So you're reading one to two inside, whereas he pushed him and leveraged him far out, which was perfect either way. And the problem was that the safety never got over top between one and two. So you can call it a push step. You can call it, there's different weave steps a safety has to take. But when you see two running out, Rajon Wright did the right thing and he stopped at the two. Could he have, like, pushed back a little bit more just to bait the shorter throw? Yeah. But his job is to take two when he goes out. Yeah. One with a fade. That is all the safety's job. There is nobody else on a 2x2. You take that.
Why is the safety late on that one? What would have caused him to be late on that?
In my opinion, and this is what Coach Hall always told us, is eyes. I think he got lazy, lackadaisical with his eyes. He's just watching the quarterback, reading the quarterback for way too long. You read your keys first. That's number one. I mean, a ball is going to always beat you to a spot, unless you're going to the spot because you're reading the actual coverage you're supposed to instead of the quarterback's eyes. I mean, he should have easily been there. It was a well-thrown ball, but it would have been a great interception if he would have just done his job. I think the coordinators put the perfect play in the right situation at that time, and it just was not fully executed the way it could have been. When you're so hurt just watching that play on repeat, and we're just sitting there going through it in the group chat, like, that was cover three. And I'm like, no, that's cover two. And, you know, it's just like, oh, there's a cloud. It's like, yeah, Rajon Wright was in cloud coverage. That means that was safety. There's only two high safeties. you should have been there. And so just time after time, just watching that play, it's just so hurtful because that was a moment that could have finished the whole game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, USC still would have had the ball, but I mean, you know, I think at that point it would have been 3rd and 10. And so I don't know. Obviously, that was a big play, but you know, you got to come away from the game, even though Oregon State lost. I mean, that was as good a defensive effort as you could have expected to see from this team. I mean, that's as good as we've seen since probably 2012 season with what they did against an offense that had been so explosive for three games. What did you think of the game plan? Was there one or two things you thought about the game plan was really effective?
Yeah, I mean, so when you're looking at, you have Fenwick, you have Martinez, and you have Griffin. I think the rotation was really nice, and when they started figuring out who's hottest, I like that they started feeding Griffin. I think that our pass.
Oh no! I was talking about the defense first. About what did you think about the defensive game plan?
Defense, you know, was spot on. I mean, truthfully, yeah.
Was there one or two things you really thought really made that defense on Saturday night?
Not as much. I think they were key and honed in on every area to a point where, like, it was just great play overall. I think the blitzes were timed very well throughout the game. I think that their coverage was well downfield. They were going against some of the best receivers that play in the Pac-12. Some of them were transfers from other conferences, and they played them amazingly. They had the transfer from Oregon that is the running back now at USC. They stopped the run. And, I mean, I saw a stat during the game. They said they had, like, 300-something yards, 400 or 500 yards the first three games in. And then come to this game, they had 50 yards, like, by halftime, something like that. And
yeah,
I was in shock because that's how well they were playing overall on defense. And, I mean, you can't play better than that.
I'm just curious, how much, you know, leading into a game, how much do you guys study film in terms of trying to find tells? You know, because it seemed like there had to be a couple of things that maybe USC was doing that they found on film that they could tell what might be coming. And how much time do you spend looking for signs of, you know, quarterback tipping off a play or a receiver tipping off a play?
That was one of my favorite things to do. And so some of that also goes into if you want to keep yourself accountable and hold yourself accountable, like watching film outside of the film room with the team. So, you know, like we watch film during, you know, like our film studies. So we probably twice a day, not even probably more than that, because you have to go through each, like, special teams, defense, offense, full team, so forth. But you read the keys and you're watching hand signals by the quarterback. You're watching hand signals by the running backs. Or how deep is the running back playing? Where's the tight end located? The slot, how tight is he to the line? Is he on the ball, off the ball? If you see a quarterback cue to a receiver or a specific receiver, if you see one receiver in a specific spot more times than not and he runs the same play over and over and over again. So, like, those are all things that we sit there and you go over film and you start to memorize. And it's literally like studying for a test, but your test is physical and it's actually active, whereas you're not writing a pencil and paper. So, I mean, day in and day out.
Was there a game you remember where, you know, you found something and it actually played out to where you could kind of tell they were going to pass, they were going to run, they were going to do something, and it showed up when you were playing?
Yeah, it was actually one of my favorites. And it wasn't even me, but I remember from the sideline watching it. So I don't know if you remember Tristan Decoud.
Yeah.
He was a corner for us for Oregon State, and we were playing Cal at home. We watched on film more times than not. We talked about it all the time. We're like, yo, if you see the quarterback throw up a 5 signal like twice to like the outside receiver, it's a hitch regardless, and he's going there. And I remember watching the game, and I was staring at the quarterback. I'm looking at the coverage, and I'm looking at the field and the personnel. And I look at the quarterback again, and he throws this 5 signal just twice. And I was like, oh, my gosh, my eyes lit up. And I looked at Tristan. Tristan's eyes were already lit. Like, he didn't even move. As soon as the ball was snapped, he forgot the whole coverage, sprinted straight to the receiver, and got a pick. And I was like, I'm so happy that he, I was like, if he was not bright enough to read that. But, I mean, trust and watch film as much as anybody, probably more often than a lot of people. So, you know, like those are moments that you make your plays.
Yeah. So about the running game, you know, it's obviously okay. I mean, they're getting good yard, they're getting decent yardage, but it just seems like there's something missing. And I don't, it's not last year's running game. Maybe it's, and I don't know if they're rotating too many guys in and they're not going to one guy in particular. I know I talked to Jonathan about that today. You know, he said early in the season, they want to, you know, get all three of them going, and eventually maybe they will go with one guy. But do you think is there something to, you know, getting a guy on the field and getting him, trying to see if you can get him hot?
You have to get him in a rhythm. Hot. Yeah, you have to have a main guy and you have to get him hot. So I think that's the discomfort in Oregon State's run game right now, is they don't know who the guy is. So he's still trying to figure out who can be that leader in the backfield. Whereas now he's giving Lowe carries, he's giving Griffin carries, he's giving Martinez carries, he's giving Fenwick carries. And it's like, you want Fenwick and Martinez to be the guy. Like, it's very noticeable. But in my opinion, Martinez is still young. He has so much time ahead of him. Fenwick is in ways like a bigger back to me, where I think he's going to get you short yardage. I think he has explosive plays. I think he's a great running back. But in my opinion, from what I just saw from the USC game, is I'm giving Griffin carries more, because not only is he getting yak yards, which is yards after like contact, he's a hype man. Like, he brings the energy. He's out there and he makes a play, he's screaming, he's showing everybody, let's go. And I think that was such a momentum thing that helped keep the offense in a positive mood, like, you know, like getting them going more and more often. Because he just kept, like, he's like, feed me, give me the ball, I will carry us if I'm given the opportunity. And like, he made every play, even when he got a negative like 3 yards, he come back with the next one, like 10, 7 yards. And it's like, okay. Whereas like, I think like right now, Fenwick still needs to find his like groove, where when he gets tackled low or on the ankles, he falls, he's done. But he's also 6'2", 6'3", 6', 6'1". But like, because he's so tall, one hit could be the downfall and he could just fall. Whereas Griffin is so low, when he takes a hit, he still has all balance. And he's such a hype man. And then Martinez, I think that one, he has so much time. He has so much natural athleticism and he's so gifted that one day soon, whether it be this year, halfway through the season, or next season beginning, he's going to explode soon. And I've said that since watching his film from when he was a senior till now. I think he's going to explode here pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, you could see little flashes of him. We touched on this earlier about Chance Nolan and the interceptions. Some of them were good plays. There was some pressure on Chance. But, I mean, there was two of them where you could see it before he even threw the ball. It was going to be a pick. Because he just – I mean, he didn't – I didn't think he had as much pressure on – he had some pressure, but he threw both of them off his back foot. And you could just tell they were not going to be good throws. And sure enough, they weren't. The deep throw in the third quarter, I mean, they were taking a chance there. I don't know why they were so desperate at the time, because it seemed like they had kind of control of the game and they were at midfield. But, you know, you take a shot. That's not – I don't have a problem with that one. And then the last one was, you know, he threw in a triple coverage. And, again, I didn't know they needed to be that desperate. It was 3rd and 10, so maybe. I mean, it seems like you want to – the safe one would have been going for a 6 to 8 yard play and then bringing in Jack Coletto and see what he could do on 4th down. But, you know, it's easy to say from on Monday night, as opposed to Sunday, Saturday, when you're calling plays. But what did you think of the interceptions that Chance threw?
I mean, I think Chance Nolan threw some, not even 50-50. He gave his receivers 25% of a chance. I mean, when you're sitting there throwing into double, triple coverage, you're making it hard on yourself, the team, your offense. And maybe there was something that he saw out there that I couldn't see from, you know, as a fan watching the game. But, I mean, when I'm watching, and yes, he had pressure on some, but just throw it away. Live to play another down. I mean, that's just what I would have done. I mean, not would have done, but I'm not a quarterback. But, like, if I were to be in that circumstance, I'm just throwing it away. It's half of them weren't on third down. Just throw it away. You know, live to play another down. You have shorter routes. You know, if it's third and 10, throw it to, a 6 yards out or something and let your athletes make plays. And that's why Jonathan Smith is so good at fourth down. You know, you have Coletto. That's a privilege. You know, it's a blessing that Oregon State has somebody so big and that knows how to have that fight and that dog in them to go for that fourth and two, fourth and one, fourth and four.
Right.
So it's like, just give your team a chance instead of trying to go for it all. And I think he's never been hit with that stage yet where it's like, I don't think I've seen Oregon State that packed in that small of a stadium in a long time for the whole game.
Yeah.
And it could have been stage fright. Yeah. But at the same time, like, you know, you were put on the team and the starting quarterback as a leader. They believe that you would not take that pressure. Like, just play the short routes. Now, if it's Coach Smith that wanted the long route, yeah, I wouldn't force it. I don't know. It's rough, and I get you're the quarterback, so all eyes are on you at all times of the day. But, I mean, just throw it away and play for another down.
Yeah, I don't mean to be, harsh with, Chance Nolan, but that's the position you sign up for when you play quarterback. You're going to get scrutinized, and when you make plays like that, I mean, that's why they pay quarterbacks the most money in the NFL, and so I guess it just comes with the territory. But I mean, on the other hand, I mean, he is Oregon State's best option at this point. I don't see any reason why anybody would even think of wanting to make a change at quarterback right now. So he's been solid for the most part. He just got to clean up those four or five throws he has every game that you just wonder, where's this going? But
I think he'll come back next week. And I think he learned his lesson. Like, hey, all right, yeah. I can't do that. He probably talked with the team and said, hey, that's on me. This game's on me. I got y'all from here. Like, don't keep all trust and faith in me. I got you guys. And, I'll pull this one out next time if it comes down to the wire. So,
right.
I've seen a lot of great things. He's consistent. This was just a bad moment for him, and everybody has him. It just happened at the biggest time where we were going to go 4-0.
So we touched on Reeser on Saturday night. I was at the stadium, but how did it come across on TV?
They didn't show the other side as much, so it made it look very packed all the time. But it looks good. It looks good. Now you can see that there at times they would show that side and it'd just be empty. But the sides that were
that side's empty because it's under construction.
Exactly. But everything from all the fans and seeing that they stayed a full game, four quarters, that shows Beaver Nation believes in this team. And Oregon State is this year's Oregon State team is a team that's going to we can do great things. And I believe and I think it's going to be amazing to watch Oregon State this year. Whole way through.
Yeah, I did. I mean, it was as electric as I've seen Reeser in a long time. And I've been going games there for decades, and seen a lot of bad football out there, and seen some good football. And I mean, that was something else. The other night, I did love that they put USC's band clear up in the Valley View seats, way up in the top corner of the stadium, and that had to be so hot up there before the game because it was hot on the field. And they were up in the top. I mean, it was like 85, before the game, and they're in their band uniforms, and they're sitting up in this, way at the top of the stadium, and it's kind of funny, but it's USC.
I did love that.
Yeah. So up next for Oregon State is Utah. The last year the Beavers won 42-34 in Reeser. They were the only team to beat the Utes during the Pac-12 season. Oregon State trailed 24-14 at halftime. Then they went on a run where they outscored Utah 28-7 to take a 11-point lead, and they held on in the end. So this is a team that they're the last team to beat Utah from the Pac-12. So they've got that feeling, that part feeling good about it. They 2 years ago they went down to Utah and barely lost. They lost 30-24. I think Chance Nolan had Oregon State on a drive that could have won the game. They came up short on it, but so they played well in that stadium. but that year that stadium was empty. This is going to be a different situation. I mean, you've probably played in a few stadiums that were packed, and Oregon State's already got the experience of Fresno State, which was packed. It's just going to be a different deal for Oregon State Saturday than it was against Utah, I would assume.
Oh, yeah, 100% agree. I mean, I was on the field last year when we beat Utah, and that was electric and fun. I loved watching that game, and I think that with the momentum that we've taken from the Fresno State game, where we played there in the big stadium with the packed stadium with all the fans there, to playing the number 7 team in the country with USC and barely losing to them, I don't think Oregon State goes in there, you know, like scared, shy, or anything. I think they go into it going like, hey, we still have all the momentum. And I think this is a beatable Utah team. And I think last year when I was sitting there giving my opinion on how the game was going to end out, it was also out of scarce. Like, I hope this isn't like a Oregon State that, you know, cowers down like the past couple of years. So I think we go into this game, or I think Oregon State goes into this game, and they come out better than going in, and it's going to be a close one. It's going to be a dogfight. I see us up 7. And stressing me out again, but I see us winning by 7.
Wow. Last week you were a hater. You picked Beavers to lose by 17. This week you're picking them to win by 7 on the road.
I'm not. Hopefully I'm right on one.
Wow. Let's touch on a couple things about Utah. Their quarterback, Cameron Rising, it's just the latest in the quarterbacks Oregon State's having to deal with. I mean, you got Jake Haner from Fresno State, and then you had Caleb Williams from USC, and now you got Cam Rising, who's the favorite to win the Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year. At this stage, it's probably going to come down to their game when they play USC, because there'll be those two quarterbacks on the field. There's a few other guys too are there in the running, but I would think he's probably the favorite at this point. Last year he was 22 of 36 for 267 yards and 2 touchdowns, and he also ran 10 times for 73 yards against Oregon State. So, you know, they got an eyeful of him last year. What I don't know how much you've seen Cameron Rising play, but what was your impression of him as a quarterback from what you've seen?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of him this year. I think it's going to be a very big thing that he can move. He can run. So it's like, you know, we got to keep him in the pocket, keep him contained. And yeah, he can sling the ball. He can move the ball. So it's like, you know, I think if our defense can stick with what they're doing, on top of the linebackers are ready for a running quarterback, we definitely, we can do well. But if he starts getting outside the pocket and making his normal plays, his normal progressions, you know, just plays the way he knows how to play, it's going to be very rough for us to come down, you know, just time after time. And so we'll see how this goes, but I mean, I believe in the Beavers. I'm a Beaver believer through and through. And I think this is a whole different game plan than it's going to be from, you know, against USC or even Fresno State, because he's a different kind of runner and he's a different kind of thrower. And plus, he's at a bigger level than Fresno State. So he really gets this.
Is he more, is Rising more of a design runner than, say, Caleb Williams was? Because it seemed like Caleb Williams never really looked to run, but he was always on the run because he was getting pressured, and he always slipped out of every, it seemed like he slipped out of every pass rush.
Yeah, that's the difference between Caleb and him, is that Caleb only moved out of the pocket when needed. Caleb was that same way at Oklahoma, where he loved being a pocket quarterback. He was good at it. And I think this guy can definitely move with his legs and make passes open for him.
You know, Utah is really the epitome of a college football program. I mean, they build it under Kyle Whittingham. He knows what he wants. You know exactly what you're going to see from Utah. You know you're going to see a tough physical team that wants to run the ball and throw to the tight end, and they'll mix in. You know, they've obviously got some good receivers too, but I mean, there's no secrets when it comes to Utah. You played against them once, I think. When was it? 2016. What do you remember just playing against a Kyle Whittingham team?
They love to run the ball. They are the SEC of the Pac-12, where they're like, "Hey, we're going to run it down your throat. and basically make you either man up or back out. And so, you know, it's going to be, can you stop the run? And then we'll go elsewhere. And can you stop the tight ends? And then we'll go elsewhere. And, you know, they're going to build it from the inside out. And, you know, we just need to stop one thing at a time and understand that the layers will start to unfold as we start taking things down.
Utah's going to be without their big tight end, Brant Keithy. He's probably the first. He was going to probably be the first team all Pac-12 tight end, and, you know, barring, you know, like a Luke Musgrave or somebody like that, because he's pretty much done it all. And that's a big blow to their offense. But I'm just looking at their roster; they seem to have no shortage of tight ends there.
Yeah. It's going to be a battle of tight ends, and I mean, they might have had a great tight end that's hurt at the moment, but I don't think any other one of their other tight ends is near as good as him. So
yeah,
I think that makes it on equal playing field if we still have Musgrave out, and I think it's just going to be a good game overall.
Last thing I want to go to, just go to the readers here, see if they got any questions. I'm just looking here. What do you think are the keys to the game against Utah?
Keys to the game is going to start with run game. I think we still need to basically figure out how we're going to work that out. And then, again, like every week with Oregon State, it's more penalties than not. You know, we can't have bad snaps. We can't have late snaps and basically just running out pointless clock. And it's going to be up to, I think, Chance Nolan's going to come back this week and just say, like, all right, time to buckle down and read his keys and make the short progression throws if needed, or make his deep passes on point without triple coverage. So I think he's going to definitely own up from last week, and he's going to come back with this week with vengeance. And so That's going to be a main point. That's going to be very crucial to the team, as well as, you know, just the run game and trying to figure out, and we need to figure out who the running back's going to be. That's going to be our premier back. I think the one defense other question, is great. Go for it.
One other question was, I don't know if you've seen any of this on social media, but the post game was a little bit of a crap fest. You know, there was a couple of USC players were swimming on the Beaver logo at midfield, and there was some, you know, back and forth with USC players going up the ramp with fans and whatnot. And I'm just going, I don't really care that much. I mean, if fans are going to get involved with the other team, I mean, that's what's going to happen. The other team isn't going to be, you know, throwing up, saying stuff if the fans aren't throwing it back at them to start with. So, the swimming on the Beaver logo, it's not classy, but I don't know. I don't care that much. I don't know what you think of that, but.
I mean, I just say, hey, they won a day, but I mean, there's a long battle. You won a battle. You didn't win the war. I think we'll see them again here pretty soon, a couple weeks, I hope, or they'll lose. I don't think that they're as great as everybody thinks they are. Now it's definitely showing because Oregon State showed it. And yeah, they won a day. They can swim on a logo. Good job for you. That's just like immature. But when you guys lose to some nobody or Utah or Oregon or Colorado or Cal, yeah, everybody's going to sit back and look at you, and you're going to drop. You're going to see your ranking go from like 7 right now or 6 to 21 to nobody. So, I mean, let them win the day, but they didn't win anything that big. We just showed America that they're not as great as everybody thinks they are.
We'll wrap this week's edition of the Beaver Banner podcast up here. Remember, you can find this podcast wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Be sure to check out Oregon Live for all our Oregon State content. We'll be back next week to talk about the Beavers game at Utah, and then we'll look ahead to yet another evening football game at Stanford at 8:00 on October 8th. My God, these night games are just so killing late. Me. I mean. I'm not. It'll be 2:00 getting out of the press box, but it is what it is. It's the Pac-12. So, anyway, we'll see you next week on the podcast.